And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Plus minus.
Curry, way downtown. Bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot from Curry!
Tim Kawakami deserves all the credit there.
Plus minus.
Curry driving again. Oh, you're kidding me!
Tell Marcus that he asked that question about my defense. You hear that, Marcus?
Anthony, you know me well, buddy. Y'all have a great night.
I think you got the highest plus minus in the season in NBA history.
Hello and welcome to an NBA Finals preview edition of the Warriors Plus Minus podcast. Warriors Celtics. Tim Kawakami is here. Marcus Thompson is waiting in the wings.
Feels like a post game. All 82 here while we wait for Marcus to finish up. Except for it's in the morning. It's just we got to get back into that rhythm. Post game rhythm. Pre-game. That's what we are.
First thought when you heard Warriors Celtics?
I agree with Draymond Green that the Celtics were the best team in the East. As Slater knows, I kind of wanted to go to Miami. I think I was pretty public about that. I respect Miami and I want to go there. But even when Miami won game six in Boston, I just thought Boston was a better team and they're better equipped to play the Warriors. Like, you know, I'm going to write about this today. Like, if you had to draw up a team that would give the Warriors problems and has given the Warriors problems, you'd say somebody who can guard Steph Curry, Marcus Smart, and a couple of really dynamic wings who can play both ways. And obviously Tatum has been that, and Jaylen Brown can be that. Also, the backline defense with Slater, which you have documented quite well, if Robert Williams is healthy, there's a lot of stuff they got. And they're the toughest team for the Warriors to face this playoffs, and the toughest ones possible that could have come out of the East. Would you agree with that, Slater?
Yeah. And this is, by the way, an opinion shared by many within the Warriors. I mean, all season it was like, as Boston was, you know, on, I shouldn't say all season, like the last few months, as Boston had this like crazy turnaround and over the last, you know, whatever, 40 games or so, it was like this crazy defensive rating. Everybody within the, and I should say everybody, but a lot of people who really follow the league closely within the Warriors were like, you see what Boston's doing? That might be the best team in the league. Now, there was also times during the playoffs where you would be talking to them, and you know, where there's always conversations, particularly about the other conference, just like, hey, what, you know, what do you think of the Miami series? It was like, you know, Boston in five, Boston's going to take down Milwaukee easy, Boston's going to wipe Miami away. And it was always like, then you would see them as the series progressed, like, you know, why is it 2-2? You know, why is it 3-2? You know, why is it going to game seven? So as much as Boston does profile as like a really difficult matchup, which does matter, as we all know, like playoffs are a lot of times about, you know, styles make fights, but they have not had an impressive postseason run. I mean, I'm sitting there watching the Miami series the entire time, and it's like at no point in that series do I think Boston is losing it until suddenly Jimmy Butler is rising for three with 13 seconds left in game seven with a chance to take the lead. That's how close they were to losing this series, which is like, why were they that close to losing this series?
Milwaukee almost went out against the Nets 2 years ago, right? When Kevin Durant, so that foot isn't on the three, that goes in. I mean, like, we can play that out a lot, but I agree. They can be sloppy. They can have a hard time scoring. They really are. How many times is Marcus Smart taking the shot at the end? It is amazing. They've got Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and a lot of times this is Marcus Smart just because he's got the guts to take the last shot. Things can get bogged down. They are sort of familiar to me with the Warriors. Like, they turn the ball over too much. They try to do too much dynamic stuff. And sometimes they just get shut down, even with all the talent they've got. But I just think if you're going to drop a game-to-game situation, the Celtics can do stuff that bug the Warriors. The Warriors can do stuff that bug the Celtics, clearly. Yes, they're not. They haven't been. But two game series, right? Two of them. The Warriors have lost, what, total seven games? 2-3-2? Yeah. So, obviously, the Celtics are not all-powerful. Obviously, they've had some struggles. But You know, sometimes the individual thing is the series, we play them up too much. It just becomes like, what are they going to do against the Warriors in this series? And I think it's going to be really tricky. However, having gotten through the 2-7-game series, they're going to be fatigued. There's no question. I mean, the Warriors having home court advantage, so the Celtics have to play Game 5 in Miami, go back to Boston, lose Game 6 in Boston, go back to Miami, win Game 7, go back to Boston, and then fly out here. I think they flew out yesterday. I'm not quite sure. And deal with the media today, which we know is going to be a circus, and then play Game 1. Like, they're going to be tired. Like, that could really affect Games 1 and 2, I think.
Yeah, I think Game 1 is absolutely massive for the Warriors to win, where it's not like if the Boston loses, I'm not suddenly like, you know, Boston's done this series. Where if the Warriors lose, I'm like, uh-oh, you know, because everything does, really these first two games profiles well for the Warriors. The 3-day rest advantage, as you mentioned, the fact that historically, you know, and the Cavaliers teams have talked about this in the past, but, you know, you play this like gritty Eastern Conference basketball, you know, a lot of times it is, you know, high pick and roll type stuff, isolation type stuff. It's, you know, you're playing more low scoring games, and then suddenly you're in, used to be Oracle Arena, now it's Chase, and it's just like, you know, what is this like weird machine working around me where like the best player doesn't even have the ball, he's back cutting, he's setting pin down screens, you know, their power forward who doesn't score is up top like playing traffic cop, and you know, like Klay Thompson is just suddenly like quick trigger three and everything he touches. And it's just like, to me, all of that combined with the fact that, you know, you mentioned the media circus, you know, I've had a couple Boston people call me and be like, you know, what's finals media day again? How does it work? You know, oh, wow, the practice is open. There hasn't been much open practice with the Celtics this season. I just do think that, I mean, we all know the Warriors know every single, at least the key figures know every single step of this finals process and what it's like. Whereas Boston's just going to be in discovery mode these first few days. I think even today, you know, they're going to be like, well, this media day is kind of wild. Is this All-Star weekend? Like, you know, basically here. So I do think Warriors cannot lose game one. Like, they're okay if they go to Boston 1-1. Like, they're still obviously in the series, but I think they really got to try to race out to a 2-0 lead or else it could get dangerous for them.
That's always the trigger for a long series or not, right? It's do you split at home or do you get them both? And then, which the Warriors have done the first three rounds, and even when they've struggled at times, it has pulled them through getting those, you know, those first two home games when they've had home court advantage. MT's here. MT, your initial take on the Warriors getting Boston.
To me, the series comes down to that, right? Do they go up 2-0, man, that's ball game. I think Boston gets one of these. I've thought that for two series now, so I could definitely be wrong.
Dallas should have got one of them, right? Dallas should have got one.
A lot of times I'll think one is more likely than two, like a road team comes and gets one. But I kind of think in this series, two is more likely than one. I think the Warriors might, you know, stun them a little bit early with everything, you know, circulating around this game. But then you get 2 days off and play that Sunday game too. Maybe some adjustments. Maybe Boston feels the Warriors offense a little bit better. If I was to predict, I'd probably go Warriors win one, Boston answers in two.
One can be the surprise game, but yeah, I have been emailing with an executive from the Celtics, and they're tired. Like, they're talking about flights and got to be on this flight and that flight, and it makes sense. It's not an excuse. It's real. They're going to be like in a daze today at the media day, and then they're going to be a little bit tired going into game one. They could pull it off, but they're going to be tired. And it's, but then they get 2 days off. 2 days off to the next one.
Well, they're playing the Heat. Steph Curry's getting his golf clubs re-taped.
I know. I don't have time to get my golf clubs re-gripped, and there's Steph. Da-da-da-da-da-da. I got to get my golf. It's hilarious. It's tremendous.
Well, that's how he spent his weekend. That's not how Boston spent there. So, I mean, and there's a rust factor, I guess, within that. I know, like, a lot of times NBA players talk about, you know, you want to play a game once every two or once every 3 days. Suddenly when you have a 7-day break, it's like, it's almost like this mini off season where you're a little out of it, but I don't know.
I'm surprised. Like, Kerr talked about a practice today, you know, and I know it is a quote unquote practice day, but many times you just don't even consider the media day a practice day. It's just nothing. I guess they're at home. They could take it to their facility, you know, at Chase and do it away from everybody. But you normally, like, this is just a media day. Like, you don't even think about practicing today. I'm pretty sure the Celtics are not actually holding a practice today. I think the Warriors are used to this. They kind of got to figure it out, and they're going to actually have, because guess what they have to decide? Otto Porter, Gary Payton II, and Andre Iguodala are going to be available for game one. It's pretty huge.
Yeah. Marcus, do you think that the media day aspect, the final spotlight of this all, will impact Boston, who hasn't been here, compared to the Warriors who have? I mean, or do you think that's like overrated?
I don't think it's overrated at all. I think that's very real. We've heard players feel it. I mean, as we know, man, starts of the game for the Warriors are basically everything. I mean, they don't have to start well to win, and they often don't start well. But when they do start well, that's usually the best sign. That's usually the sign they're going to win the game.
When they don't start well, it's like if you turn on the car and it's not working, it's like, you know, kind of need to. It's hard to get it jump started once it's not started.
If they just get to halftime and they're not down 15, that's a really good position for them. but you know, you start seeing tights. The Warriors were that way. You know, they have struggled finals jitters and all that stuff in game one. So I do think that's something. There is a newness to like the chaos of the finals, right? Like that they haven't experienced before. And you know what? Many Warriors haven't experienced it before either. I do think it's important that Steph, Clay, Draymond, Looney have that experience, but
the coaching staff, yeah, the organization,
you know, does that help Jordan Poole? I'm sure it does, right? Does it help, you know, some of these other guys who are going to play who haven't been in it? I'm sure it does, but the entire Boston roster will be on the floor for the finals together, brand new. And I think I forgot who was talking about that. They're being treated as a team that doesn't have experience. They got a lot of experience, but there is a new twist to the finals. And if it just impacts the first quarter, that's a big deal for Boston, right? If they struggle to start the game and the Warriors get off to a good start, that could literally impact game one, which will impact the rest of the series. So I don't think it's nothing. I do think, however it goes to start, though, both teams are good enough to kind of adjust to it.
And a pretty young coach, by the way. You know, who knows? I mean, Steve Kerr was pretty good as a rookie coach in his first finals. But you don't know Ime Udoka. You know, again, he dragged them through those 2 7-game series. I think he's done a great job. Clearly, they're playing great defense. But you don't know. I mean, it's a different way to approach. You have to look at the finals differently. Again, they're going to experience something today at Media Day that they just haven't experienced. And like we've gone through it, and we know what it is, and we're bracing for it. Like we know it's going to be a large expensive energy just for us. Pick up the credential, wade through everybody, try to fight through 17 microphones to get one question in. Like they're going to feel it and see it, and it's going to be, you know, and I think Slater's got it right. It's like an all-star game, but for everybody, the whole roster, it's an all-star weekend piled up, and then you got to go play a game that matters, the biggest game of your life. All these things add up. Again, the Warriors went through it fine their first time with Steph, Draymond, and Clay. That doesn't mean everyone's going to go through it fine. Doesn't mean everybody on their roster is going through it for the first time is going to get through it. And doesn't mean everybody in Boston is going to get through it. It is a different feel to it. Chase Center is going to feel different for game one.
Ime Udoka also, you know, outside looking in, strikes me as like a pretty disciplined coach who probably has like a pretty regimented practice routine. And, you know, I don't know that they're like super media, like, you know, open. He comes from the Spurs, you know. Yeah, I think this is going to jumble up their routine, especially traveling to start the series, much more than, like, you know, Steve Kerr and a group that's like you said, knows exactly what's going on. But again, that may not matter if suddenly Rob Williams is out there swatting everything in the first quarter and, you know, Tatum and Brown are flying around. The Warriors have 7 turnovers because they're too excited. Because, you know, this is a nervous moment for the Warriors, right? Back on the stage, you know, can this, you know, more aging teams still kind of do it on this biggest stage. Like, I can see a bad first quarter from them.
Oh, we've seen it. We've seen it throughout the playoffs. And not just in game ones either. Like, we've seen it later in the series. And it was particularly when the other team's playing really good defense. And guess what? The Celtics are built to play really good defense against everybody. But, you know, specifically, I think a ball movement team like the Warriors, you make all those extra passes against a switching long defense. Memphis, right? That's kind of what Memphis was, with incredible help side, you know, defense at the rim. Yeah, I could see some turnovers. Both teams, you know, I could see a mistake-filled first quarter, and then just who kind of gets it together and, you know, evens it out in the second quarter on, because I think there's going to be a lot of turnovers throughout this series. I just think that both teams are turnover prone, And, you know, it just matters how many of them are the bad lie ball kind that end up in dunks or threes on their side, and then what team kind of cools it off and settles with the ball. But we know, I mean, Jaylen Brown's and Jason Tatum are turnover machines. They just are. That's how they make plays, is they get into risky positions, drop the ball, and the ball goes the other way. The Warriors have a couple of those kind of players, too. I just think it's going to be mistakes and great plays and mistakes and great plays and great defense. And just full attention, at least the first two games, I think, are just going to be full attention.
Marcus Thompson, who is the one player that interests you most in the opener?
No, I think opener is going to be stars. Well, the whole series to me is Clay. The whole series is Clay Thompson. If they get any version of the Clay Thompson we saw in game 5 or game 6, essentially if he's making shots, whenever we've seen Boston lose, it's been because another guy was making shots. Whatever the primary focal point guy, you know, whoever that was, it's the other guy who makes them pay for it. You know, when Drew Holiday made shots, Milwaukee won. And when he didn't, they lost. And whether it was Max Strus or Oladipo, Kyle Lowry, whenever at Miami, got somebody else. So the Warriors do have a few options for somebody else. But to me, the chief of that is Klay Thompson. I could totally see a scenario where Klay Thompson wins Finals MVP.
Ooh,
I know. Wow. People would give it to him out of that.
Aggregate that one.
If he has 3 games where he's dropped 30 points for Klay, Steph, 3 games of 30 is like,
if they win a series,
man, it's 11 people. It's 11 people vote. Like, it's not like it's this real arbiter of. It's 11 people vote like right before.
Klay has shown in these series like he's got one, maybe two of those like big ones in his holster, and other than that, it's probably going to be 17 points on, you know, one night it's 7 of, you know, 17. Some nights it's, you know, 5 of 18. Some nights he sinks into the background. He's not going to be very impactful rebounding. He's not going to be a big assist guy. He's not the defender he used to be. He's helpful, but he's not, you know, he's not going to have the storyline Wiggins might have on the defensive end. I don't see 3 to 4 explosive nights from Klay just because, you know, just age and injury history. Like, I think all they need is like 1 or 2 of those. And I think that's all he probably has, which is fine, but I just don't see like Finals MVP Klay.
I think that's gonna be really hard. Yeah, and he's gonna have Jaylen Brown probably guarding him, which is not easy. He'll be guarding Jaylen Brown too, right? I mean, I think that's the way the matchups are gonna work. If you got Wiggins on Jason Tatum, that's hard. It's, you know, they need a good series out of Klay, but I agree with you. Like, the one where he put it on Klay, this is the guy. I think he's got one of them, maybe two of them a series. And it's going to be tough, man. If he is at MVP, Marcus, I'm going to do a whole show praising you. That, man, that is a call. That's a pull.
Somebody's got to get the shots for how they're going to play. Like, who's getting those shots?
It's going to be Klay, but is he going to make 8 threes? How many times is he going to make 8 threes in this series? It's going to be tough.
Dallas pretty well, at least early in the series, not in the clincher, but ran him off the line, stayed attached to him. I assume that's generally Boston's strategy. You know, as they go over the scouting report, Ime's not going to be like,
I think he missed a lot of shots.
No question. But that's part of it. That's part of it. You know, that's part of our factoring. Again, it's possible. I'm not saying it's impossible. I just think Wiggins would, I mean, it's such an obvious one to pick, but Wiggins is so huge in this. And, you know, my guy, Jordan Poole, what killed Miami at the end? Tyler Hero was out or extremely limited in game 7. They just couldn't score. They didn't have a secondary thing. You go to the bench and you got no other way to score. So Jimmy Butler has to play the entire freaking game because Tyler Hero, one of their most important scorers, could not play. When the Warriors get into the jumble and they can't have Steph play 48 minutes, we know it's going to be 38. It's not going to be 48. Those 10 minutes plus the minutes with Steph, Jordan Poole is going to be immense. He's going to be tough on defense. I don't know who he's guarding. Who's he guarding? I don't know. Maybe Robert Williams.
And I think they'll match his minutes with Derek White pretty decently. Last game they played against Derek White, they had him basically, you know, kind of sag off Derek White. Soft closeout, let him shoot threes. You know, they were doubling off Derek White at times. And the other thing, I just did the Russillo podcast, and we kind of got wrapped into this discussion about, you know, Poole defensively in the series. And I I kind of think it's a little bit of a better defensive series for him than Dallas, because Dallas is going to go mismatch hunting more often. And not only are they going to try to get the switch, which the Warriors didn't really allow, they were hedging it back, but the help was always so much more concerned on even taking one extra step over to help pool, because what was Dallas's entire machine built on? Take that extra step, ping, ping, 3-point shoot is going up. I mean, it was just this like 3-point machine that just needed a little bit of a crack, and we're trying to use Jordan Poole, the weak link, to get that crack. Whereas, you know, Boston's more methodical. They have better individual players. But I think if suddenly it's Tatum against Poole in isolation, I think the Warriors' help side defenders are more willing to come help than they were against Dallas, because not every player on the floor is a shooter like against Dallas, and not everything is built on jacking as many threes. So I'm not as worried about Poole in this series defensively, just because I just don't think that it's as built to like go after one particular person.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the exposure on the threes is less than it is against Dallas, because Dallas shoots more than anybody, and has had had better shooters from three than Boston, except for in the Warriors series. Maybe it was a little come and go, but they still, Boston still got weapons. Again, you know, like we keep going, Marcus Smart ends up with the ball in his hands a lot more than you think, and he's willing to take those shots. But can you imagine if it, even at the end of a clock, it ends up being pulled on Marcus Smart? Marcus Smart is going to take him right to the rim. He's just going to like escort him to the rim, and then the Warriors will have to react to that. Again, I think Jordan Poole can hold, you know, can hold up, and if he does, and if he scores 15 to 22 in a game at a pretty high efficiency, the Warriors are going to win a lot of those games. You made a great point. Like that the drive to the hoop is going to be a lot less available to him than it was against Dallas. It just was, once he got past the initial defense, he was at the rim, and that was it. A couple times they had Kleber jumping in there. But with the Celtics, it's not going to be just like that. But he still has to do it. He still has to try it just to try to move that defense. They don't have another guy, with a possible exception of Wiggins at times, who can explode like that. I think Poole is going to be a large, large factor in this. Either way, we're going to be talking about Poole in this series throughout as kind of a swing factor. Like we talk about Smart, maybe. Like we talk about, Grant Williams. What did he make, like, 7 threes in one of those Miami games? Like, these are all talented players. That's why this is such a great series. Is you can keep going down the line and talk about really important players on both sides. But I think Poole, it's Curry, Wiggins, Poole, if I had to rank three in order.
I think that's the trap, though. We saw against Memphis, they don't shoot threes that well, and then you end up giving them threes. And Boston will make – they're going to get hot for two games out of this series. Like, we've seen it.
Remember Derek Grant Williams?
Went crazy, you know, in the last series.
They've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 – 7 games in these playoffs with at least 14 threes, right? And the Warriors do kind of see threes. To me, that is the way Boston can win. That's the only way they can score enough. I don't think they can score enough if you don't, if they don't make threes. I mean, they're not holding the Warriors to 80. They might a game hold the Warriors to 90 points, but generally speaking, I think that's a bit of a risky trap. They'll get them up. They will chuck them threes. There'll be games where they're ice cold on them, but then there are going to be games where they make a bunch of them. They just kind of got to hope it's in Boston and not in San Francisco. But I do think that's a bit of a vulnerability where the non-threatening three-point shooting team, I mean, even the great three-point shooting team got looks on the Warriors just because of how they played D. So I do think that's a risky thing. But the one way I think the Luka matchup helped is I think Wiggins and Looney, they got a lot of practice at playing the no step back three, like on ball defense, where they were on Luka basically saying, you're going to have to drive past me. I think you got to do that with Tatum. Like, you can't let this dude, you can't let him get these shots off when he's especially rolling.
I mean, I don't think they would hate the Tatum step back three necessarily.
He pulls, like, man, and then he does it late in games. And when he's making threes, like, that's how he gets the 46s. It's not all twos and free throws. Like, he will get going from three. If you take that away and you make sure Jason Tatum isn't killing you from deep, then it's, he's far more manageable to me. You know, he's far more manageable than.
But then he gets to the foul line if he gets in the lane. You know, he's such a multiple level scorer. But that's why he's great. That's why he's great. I think Jaylen Brown's, I mean, they always say this with Boston, and it's true. Jaylen Brown becomes so huge in this series. Can he score reliably? We know he's going to have a clunker. Like, he does have offensive clunkers. But, man, when he scores, they get electric because you got this other side going on. The other side of the floor now is dangerous, and you have to deal with that. And, again, and the Warriors aren't 100% equipped to deal with a great secondary scorer. They really have, I mean, they haven't this whole playoffs, right? They haven't had a team that had this two guys ready to attack them. This is what the Celtics bring at them.
Yeah, I think Brunson was kind of.
Stop hating on Reggie Bullock.
It's also why, Kleber. You know, you mentioned Clay guarding Brown earlier. And, you know, probably that's how the cross matches, you know, should match up. But Jaylen Brown pretty quick, and Clay is now more of like the, you know, give him the bigger, sturdier score, not the line drive guy. What about the idea Draymond. Of Draymond?
That's
on
exactly
Draymond.
What I was thinking. Yeah, Draymond.
They don't love Draymond on off ball guards though. They lock him on ball guards, and Jaylen's not going to be bringing the ball up. I could see it. I sure could see it, but they tend to like him on the point guard because they put him on Morant at times or on the power forward. We'll see. I mean, they're not going to put him on Smart, but it's not about. I mean, as you were saying that, I go, yeah, it could be Draymond. But I don't think that's the way they're going to start. Because then you got to shuffle Clay over to who, you know?
Like
you
Horford.
To Robert Williams or Horford. Yeah, it's going to be a little tough. Like
Marcus
all
Smart.
All those matchups are tough.
We will be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
If Clay's on Horford, like, is Boston just going to be like, yeah, let's dump it down to Al Horford? And
the run? Rebounding would be tough, though, I think.
Yeah.
It would be the rebounding. That
it's
would
where
be
you got to trust Marcus Thompson's Moses Malooney.
Moses Malooney, baby.
Just take his cap in. Just, you got the rebound.
He
every
solves
rebound in this
all
series,
rebounding
you go get
troubles.
It, Lou. You go get it. And you go get your max contract. Everyone's asking me about Wiggins getting a max contract and about Poole. Let's get Kevon Looney a max contract. Come on now.
It'll be difficult for Clay and Al Horford to get a rebound when Looney gets every single rebound.
He's averaging 42 rebounds a finals game. Come on now. He's good. I mean, it's amazing that we can just pencil it in, right? I mean, I think I said it last podcast. Is he good now? Is Kevon Looney good? He's good. Like, you could just write in 14 rebounds, Kevon Looney.
This series is going to test him, though. You know, especially if Robert Williams is at all himself at any point in this series, which I don't know if he's going to be. I mean, he certainly hasn't looked like it lately, but
he's going to play a little at least and at least be a threat. And then Kevon, get those shovel passes from Steph on the pick and roll and convert, what, four of them a game and get 12 rebounds. He's done a lot of it this postseason, but He wasn't really doing against Memphis early in that series, by the way. That's why he was out of the starting lineup. And then he did it for game six. We'll see. Marcus, he's your guy. Is he an MVP candidate too?
Relax. Relax. Because I just think the guy who makes the shots that are created by, you know, Boston's desire to take away Steph will get a lot of attention. I mean, I remember talking to people during the Maverick series, and you know, some people had votes. They didn't ask me to vote until it came to game five, but you know, so game four is happening and people were talking about it. And it was like, you know, Andrew Wiggins is the Western Conference Finals MVP. Like if that thing happened in Dallas, if Warriors sweep that series, Andrew Wiggins would have been Western Conference Finals MVP. That's just based on the conversations from the voters, from the people who were voting. I think Wiggins didn't like blow up that game, and then the Warriors lost, and he comes back to the Bay. So it was a little different. But the people who benefit from what Steph does get the attention. And you know, we follow this team. Like people don't fully understand what is happening. Like,
I think they've been browbeat enough over the
years. I mean, that's probably it. People just don't want to be the ones when the votes come out to say.
For sure. I mean, I think the people are afraid of that screenshot. I saw the Eastern Conference Finals MVP was 8 Jason Tatum's and
Bontemps went Jimmy Butler.
Went Jimmy Butler, which, you know, you could certainly make the argument. I'm not killing the Bontemps pick at all, but what do you think the internet did? I mean,
Bontemps did it because of the screenshot. I want you guys to know. Right, yeah. All of you are idiots.
But I do think there'll be some type of group thing on
that
it.
That doesn't sound like Bontemps at all. I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure.
I think it would have to be plainly obvious that it's like you got to vote somebody that's not Steph for it not to be Steph, because I almost think
it's a career award, right? It's like when Denzel won the Oscar.
Well, it's because like he could have won it in 15. I've pointed out that Iguodala was very much a worthy winner, but he could have won it in 15. Durant blotted out the sun in 17 and 18. So there's Curry back again. If he has a half decent series, he's the reason why they're here. He's the reason why they're back. Everything flows around Steph. If it wasn't for Steph, they would be a 35 win team or 40 win team. He's going to get it just because of that. And I think he'll deserve it. I mean, I have no qualms with it happening like that. It's just all put together because of him. They've been to the final 6 times. They would win if they win, it's their 4th finals victory, first 4th championship. Give it to Steph Curry. I got no qualms with that. Unless he has a clunker of a series, and I really doubt he's going to. I think he's set up to have a really good series. Silence. Just shut it down with that one. Who's your Celtics key guy?
Are we talking like main guys or X factors? Because to me, Jaylen Brown.
Yeah, you can say Tatum if you want. Yeah, if you want.
No, I mean like Jaylen Brown. He's kind of a key guy, but to me, he's huge. You know, he's their best fourth quarter scorer. And I do think I could see several of these games coming down to the fourth quarter, right? Just because the defenses are so good. It's probably Boston can let a game get away from them, right? They can get down 20. And you do that on the Warriors, it's probably I think they've had enough of those choke jobs during the season to kind of ward against that, right? We've seen them blow leads. So provided everybody's playing, you know, in their realm of ability for both teams, it's going to be 2 good defenses, which means 2 close games, or which means, you know, fourth quarters, you know, the game will be decided towards the end. And these are 2 of the better fourth quarter teams in these playoffs. I mean, Jaylen's shooting like 60% in the fourth quarter. Steph is like, I think Jaylen, Jason, and Steph are the 3 leading scorers in the fourth quarter. And obviously, you know, Celtics have played more games and stuff. But if it's coming down to that, now Jaylen Brown becomes hugely critical. He makes the shots that we expect out of Klay, right? Swing, open, drive, kick. He's making those shots. He can put pressure on the rim. And he's probably not being defended by your best defender, maybe by your second best defender in those late game situations.
You could flip side that X factor then and say Gary Payton II, who might get a heavy dose of Jaylen Brown if Gary Payton is healthy enough to make an impact. And, you know, obviously I still question that. He's clearly not 100%. There just sounds like today letting him stretch out his jumper to, you know, 3-point range and beyond with that left arm. And you can leave him if you know, he was already, you know, you're going to leave him, but he could actually make you pay. I just wonder where that 3-point shot is. But if he is at all like himself, and I think we all, like, he's going to be moving like himself. He's the type of dude, even if he's having pain shooting his arm a little bit, he's going to play through it. But, you know, we mentioned the way you can maybe hide Poole or replace Poole, and maybe if Looney's struggling with size, like, Gary Payton unlocks their most, I think, deadly defensive lineup that can also do some stuff offensively if he is himself.
They really have another gear defensively.
And if Andre's back,
this could be a series where nobody scores.
Yes.
We might get one of them games. It's going to be 87-84 because the two defenses.
You mean the Eastern Conference Finals? Yeah.
It is going to look different. It's going to look a lot. It's going to, you know, the shock from after the Dallas series is going to be a lot. And just how the Warriors feel that, because it's going to be very, very different. I think the Warriors need Otto Porter to play in this series. Like, he's the best net rating guy in the postseason in the entire league. Like, he's their guy off the bench that they trust to play both sides and bang and give Draymond a rest and give Looney. Unless they're going to play Draymond and Looney 42 minutes a game, like, they need Otto Porter. Because you know who it is after Otto Porter? It's Bielitsa. And I don't know that this is a Bielitsa series. I didn't think the last one would be a Bielitsa series, and he got some minutes. It might be more a Kuminga kind of series, and I kind of got a whisper about that yesterday, by the way. But we'll see. I've heard that before, and he hasn't played.
Correct. Then he blows one rotation, and yeah, it's like, no longer.
Out.
It's a Moody series.
It might be a Moody series. Yep. Yeah. I mean, you talk about a Jaylen Brown guy. That's the same physical matchup right there. But I think they need Otto Porter. They just need another big guy who they can feel comfortable with out there. You can't keep playing small. We've seen them. They've gone away from small. They're trying to keep a big guy in there every single, and sometimes two, which is, again, they'd gone away from Draymond and Looney. Porter is their answer for that. We don't know how healthy he is. I imagine he's going to play game one, but then how healthy can he stay? If Porter is not effective in this series, thank God, they're going to need Kuminga, I think. They really are. And that's how they're going to think about it. God, we need Kuminga. Uh-oh. Or it could be great. You just need another big guy who can be a threat on offense and hang in there on defense on the switches. Maybe Kuminga can't do that. I don't know. He hasn't really proven he can. But they don't have another one other than Porter. Like, they don't have that other guy. Unless Marcus is Bielitsa. Is it going to be Bielitsa for you?
I think those dudes can play in this series. I really do think the Warriors could go deeper. And I actually think they should, because of the fact that Boston goes seven deep. And eventually you are kind of banking on the battle of attrition tilting in your favor.
You don't believe in Peyton Pritchard is going to get key minutes in this one?
Peyton Pritchard going to hit a big three at some point. Probably in Boston, but Peyton Pritchard will hit a big three.
No question. But they just sat them guys. They sat them guys. Like, they just weren't playing them.
Pritchard did barely played at the end of last year.
Miami got away with playing players who just didn't give you anything defensively. I mean, they dusted off Duncan Robinson, right? Like.
And what did Caleb Martin do at all? Like, I was
Caleb
like,
Caleb
Martin again. It's like, what, like, actually, what does he do? I'm not quite sure what he does. And yet he played like 11 minutes in game six.
I think they'll be able to go a bit deeper than, you know, normal, especially to start the series. I do think, because unless the Celtics have caught fire from three and they're making everything, there's not this greater risk of the 15-0 run, right? Or the 15-0 run will have to come far more methodically unless they're making threes, right? Whereas Dallas, that thing could happen in a blink, right? And it's like bing, bing, bing. So I do think there's a little bit more room for error to get a guy in for a few minutes. So that's why I think Moses in. I could totally see Bielitsa getting some burn. And I don't know. I'm still not ready to give up on Kuminga. You see all the athleticism Boston has. It's like, at some point you got to be able to jump with those guys, run with those guys, put pressure on them. And nobody says that on this roster like Wiggins and Kuminga. Like, that's the answer.
My guess, though, is it's not a early in the series, it's a veteran series. You know, just like you saw even though they wanted to play Moses Moody, they went Damian Lee in game one against Dallas. I think they just like the veterans to get settled in the series. Especially game one, the final spotlight. I think they don't mind Kuminga and Moody sitting over there and watching game one. And then maybe it's a 2-3-4. And the fact that, you know, if there is a Porter, Payton, Iguodala sighting early in the series, like, they're just, Bielitsa, how well he played, in game five against Dallas. Like, to me, I bet they trust the veterans more early. And then, you know, you sprinkle the Kuminga Moody in as the series goes on and you see which veterans maybe don't fit against Boston.
If they've got Gary Payton and Iguodala and, you know, we're assuming Porter is playing at least early in the series, they don't necessarily need Kuminga and Moody, although I think they would help. But I do. I think they're kind of curious about Kuminga and Moody. Like, let's see what they got. Again, maybe they don't do it. We've seen them not do it. But that athleticism, like, that's real. Like, they do stuff that other guys don't do on this team. And it would be really good for them long term. Not that that's what this series is about. It's about winning a championship the way they can. But, God, wouldn't it be good for Kuminga and Moody to get, like, three games of 10 minutes apiece in this series?
All you got to do is tell Kuminga, do not take a three. Don't take, if you're open.
I think they do.
If you're open, drive.
It would help in the long term, but also, like, Steve Kerr won't and can't at all coach thinking about next season.
If the moment is right, there's several ways that could help them. And it has to make sense for the game in the moment. But also, you got, you know what? If it's a tie between Kuminga and Bielitsa, let's go with a young guy. That's all I'm saying.
I remember a couple Warriors rookies having moments in the finals. Jordan Bell started in Cleveland one time. Remember Patrick McCaw,
that was big. That was big. Yeah, that was really big. Like, didn't he guarded LeBron?
I just remember him having like an up and under reverse during like the run that kind of sealed the title.
That's with Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, and Klay Thompson on the floor. Like, that's amazing that Patrick McCaw was having those moments.
And then Andre Iguodala went to the parade and was like, they found their next Andre Iguodala. And then he's like, correct. I'm going to hold out in restricted free agency. And he did.
Someone's got to find Patrick McCaw and do a story on him this series. What the hell? Like, my God.
He's not still in Toronto?
He's out of league. He's been out of league for a while.
Does Gabe Vincent... The way Gabe Vincent, the success he had against Boston, does that bode well for Jordan Poole? I'm thinking about how do they close these games? That is what I was thinking about. Like, that's what it's going to come down to. To me, the reason you go with Kuminga over Bielitsa situationally, you're going to need the pressure release off the perimeter, right? That's what they had against Memphis. It's like, if they're going to play that hard on the perimeter, you need people diving to the rim. But, you know, Bielitsa might dive to the rim. It just won't be a dunk. You know, it'll be like a Euro step into a finger roll. But when it gets down to it, like, I feel like Jordan Poole, like, can close these games. But that means they're really – are they going to go small lineup back? Yeah, I don't think so. You can do that.
They've avoided that lineup.
You're going to play Jordan Poole in the fourth quarter, but I don't think you're playing him for the final 4 minutes. You could go offense defense, but I think – it's going to be with their guys. It's Looney and it's the other guys. Like, it's just not going to be Jordan Poole playing. Like, they're not taking Looney off the floor at the end if they can help it. So that means Jordan Poole sitting, which is how they close the last series. And Poole gives them great minutes when he's out there, 22, 24 minutes. If you press it, 26, 28. And Looney is in there at the end of the game because they need that body. And you know, maybe little, I don't know. It's hard to say because they needed him against Dallas and you wouldn't have thought that they would have. But they did need him. And they absolutely needed him against Memphis to close that series. So maybe you don't think you needed him, but they just like – Steph and Draymond like having Looney out there. Like, isn't that, I mean, it's beyond clear. Like, that's who they want on the floor in these big moments. So Looney's going to be on the floor at the close games, which means Jordan Poole probably out. Again, they could go off as defense. They could sub him out quickly. And go, you know, get Jordan in there and Looney out for a couple offensive possessions. But I think Looney's closing these games. I think the small lineup is not their primary lineup. We thought it was going to be, and it is not. It's certainly by proof of what the minutes are.
I'm getting out of here, but before I wanted to promo a few things, Tim's written a bunch of stuff this week. Marcus has.
Tim is on Tim, you just fire. Dropped.
Bam, 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 bam. That's what I do. It's what I do. It's what I spent the last week doing, reporting all this stuff.
So he just dropped, you know, a deeper look at that Wiggins trade, which was, I guess, sparked from the D'Angelo Russell signing trade. Read that Thursday morning. Me and Marcus will have something bigger, just like inside look at the state of the front office. So it's kind of a sequence deal.
We went front office on y'all.
Thursday
we
morning.
Went, Go to we the went upstairs,
read everything
baby.
We wrote this week. I'm getting out of here. Y'all can close.
Slater's out of here. He's got a drive to Chase Center. We're going to get to Media Day. Okay, Marcus, what are you looking forward to on Media Day? Anything at all?
You know what? I barely remember Media Day. This feels like it was so long ago. Like
19. I mean, it's not just the three years, right?
It's the pandemic in the middle. Like a lot. It feels like a lot of life has happened.
They switched arenas. They switched
cities. Yeah, they did. They literally switched cities. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I'm kind of looking forward to just remembering what it's like and the spectacle of it. I wonder if it's even the same now. If the new world we live in makes it a bit different. You could see, but being there yesterday and seeing them, all the prep that was happening, it was like crazy. Yeah, I was like, okay, this is good. It was crazy to set it up. So I'm like, oh, yeah, it's gonna be insane. Like, we weaving around. You can't walk around anywhere. It's like chairs and
stuff. How many different NBA people poked their heads in on the media room? I mean, it's like, what are you doing? What are you, like, they're all looking around. They're constructing a new media
literally
room,
building things, media. Like, in the Chase Center bowels. It's gonna be crazy. I wonder if you get the Guillermo figures and you get the kind of spectacle of it. I wonder if that happens. But yeah, I just, man, it feels so long ago. And it was different. Remember, and last time we were in another country for half of it, right? Like, yeah. So I'm glad you have emptied the notebook, because that allows me to not worry about anything and kind of take it all in.
That's what I'm here for, MT.
I was right last night. I was working on a piece last night. I'm like, man, that's right. Tim dropping the Wiggins piece. I'm not finishing this.
You know, I might be he's done right, for the rest of the
he's
series.
Right,
the
he's right. He's writing the sixth done, story man. Of the week. I'm not doing it. Why would I waste his work? Go ahead.
Oh, I just say, you saw me at work at the end of last series. I was freaking, I'm piling up stuff because we're going to have a lot of time off. And then once the final start, you might not see me very much. Like, this is like, let's get it all out. Like, this is a fascinating point in this franchise's history right now. And let's get through it. A lot of the interesting things. And then I got one more that'll be coming in between one and two, but I've written a lot of them. I'll put it that way. I've written like the best stuff I've got. And I'll write a predictions, I think, column today for tomorrow, but that's it. And then one more. But it's cool. I mean, yeah, we'll see. You know, we were already like, weren't you surprised that the conference finals, there wasn't
no,
that much
no, media? It wasn't. Yeah, that was weird to me. Yeah. That's why I'm curious.
Maybe because all the East Coast guys were in Boston and Miami. I don't know. Like, but we had very few national types come through. And in Dallas, there was like none. So I expect that to be a little bit, I mean, it's obviously going to be a lot different, but might be scaled down. You might be right. In this media age, in the COVID time still, maybe it's going to be a less circusy atmosphere. Although the circus is always in town in the finals. You're right. There will be the
good. But how big is it? Is the question, right? Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, is Bill Simmons going to be there with his video crew? Is the Kimmel show going to be there? We don't know, but that's what we're there to find out. I don't know that we're going to write much about all the crazy stuff, but we will get there and experience it at least. Like, have you ever reported a story out during a media day, MT, or even just a regular practice day at the finals? I don't remember, I really have. It's just too much going on. Like, these guys are pulled left and right. They got to be on this set and do that podcast. And, you know, everything's set up for the national media. I've never really felt like I get much time with anybody during the finals.
Yeah, that's absolutely wild. You get everything. You get all your interviews and all that because, you know, the people connected to the TV deals start getting all the access.
Oh, yes. Try to get Steph Curry, even MT, like, try to get Steph Curry now while he's being walked over to the ESPN set. You can't do it. Like, it's just hand delivered to the TV rights holders.
Normally it's like, all right, I'll call him or something, but can you imagine what his phone is like? He's not answering his phone, and I'm not going to be one of the people all in his phone at this time. You know what I'm saying?
Steph, it's just a couple questions. Come on now. Just a couple questions. That's, you're right. Again, someone said this, I think, to me, and like, this is veteran experience. Do your reporting in the days before the circus comes. Like, and we were afforded
like Super Bowl,
the time,
right? It's same thing. Absolutely. When media day hit, that's not for the media. That's not the time to do your work.
That is spectacle. And the players get hit with it, and then, like, again, that's where the experience comes in. Like, they're going to go, anybody who hasn't experienced this before is just going to go, what the hell? Like, what are they assembling? Like, it isn't like they wind down their practice. It's not really a practice. It's basically a shoot around. But as they're winding it down, they're building sets, you know, stages for them to be, like, literally, while they're winding down practice, they're assembling these stages for players to be on. That does not happen in any other place, in any other moment, except for the finals, and they will go through it today, so. But we're ready for it, MT. We've been through it.
Afterwards, we're trying to tell Wiggins, like, hey, man. Wiggins was like, really? What's it like? You know, Wiggins never wants to stand in chat. He was like, what is it like? And he goes, I was like, oh, man, you don't even know what you're in for. I just hope they remember them questions weren't coming from us. All them questions that you hate, you think are ridiculous, that is not us. Just remember that, Andrew, please.
He will remember it, maybe. But yeah, this is going to be the onslaught. We're all bracing for it, but the Warriors have gone through it, and maybe they will gain something from not having to be shocked by the moment. And maybe the Celtics might have it. Maybe the Celtics are going to love it. I don't know. Maybe they're a bright lights team. I don't know what the coach is. Doc Rivers, when he was a Celtics coach, was a bright lights coach. We'll see with Ime Udoka. Maybe he is. It does change, the mood changes, the atmosphere changes, and we're about ready to get to it. Okay, I'm gonna get over, pick up my credentials, so let's wrap this up, MT. You weren't there for the beginning, but you can wrap it up.
All I care about, the one thing that I want to get out of this NBA Finals, and if this happens, I will consider this a successful season, a successful year, a successful life. All I need is to see Nia Long, Ime Udoka's better half.
Probably will. Probably see a lot of other people too, but that's good. That's a great way to close the show, everybody.
Deuces.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.